So, we are still in Perek Yud Gimel, Shoftim chapter 13. We have an awful lot to say about the remainder of this Perek, which is surprising because we've been dealing with this Perek for a long time already. But there's a lot more yet to say. I'm not going to go back over again all the comments about the Plishtim and the name of the mother of Shimshon, Hatzalel Poni. But the Malach came to Hatzalel Poni and told her that she is going to have a child, told her that she's unable to have children right now and that she's going to have a child that will be miraculous, and the child will have laws that relate to being a Nazir. We said not to get a haircut, she should not eat that which is tameh. We gave different explanations for what that means, but she shouldn't have wine or call it grape products, which actually when the Malach comes back a second time he's more specific about, and the Malach just comes to her and then that's it, the conversation is over and he's gone. And she goes to tell her husband. She rushes, actually, to tell her husband. We spent some time, at that point also on the question of why Shimshon should be a Nazir. What's the goal of having him be a Nazir? We talked about it in terms of the question of whether he actually is a Nazir or not. Is he a Nazir? Is he like the Nazir in the Torah? Is he some kind of odd Nazir in the sense that the Malach tells him to do this rather than taking a vow? We said that the value of it may be in terms of standing apart from society, and that may be especially important for Shimshon, given some of his natural inclinations. But then we had this other approach, that the imagery of being a Nazir is that he is a man of God, and that everything that happens for him, while it has magical imagery associated with it, or things that are usually thought of as magical, is actually co-opted here to say it's all from Hashem. That which the world thinks of as magic is actually from God. And that's going to be seen in Shimshon's career. So Manoach is very impressed, and he says, I want to see this Malach too. Whether it's because he doesn't trust her, which was one approach we saw in the Medrash, or whether it's that he does trust her, but there's something missing in the instructions, because they've been told what to do when she's pregnant, but nothing about what's supposed to happen once the kid is born. And you know, maybe there are special instructions related to his life after that. How do you know what to do? We need the Malach to come back and tell us. And so the Malach comes back a second time. We noted, though, that the structure of the second visit is very much about emphasizing the greatness of Hatzalel Poni to her husband. So the Malach comes back to her, even though Manoach is the one who prayed for this visit. And we saw the emphasis on her energy and her alacrity, the way that she rushes to do the things that she does. We also noted that she's going to figure out that it's a Malach before Manoach does. And the Malach is going to take pains to emphasize her greatness in speaking to Manoach, so that the Malach, when Manoach says, "What am I supposed to do?" the Malach's response is, "Exactly what I told her." Right? I'm not even going to bother to repeat this for you. It's exactly what I told her, except that he then does go on to repeat it. And we also noted, that was the last thing we did, that the Malach omits her status as an Akara when speaking to Manoach. He doesn't say to Manoach, "Your wife is not able to have children, now she's going to have." He just says she's going to have a baby. And we saw that in the Medrash portrayed as potentially building on a running debate between the two of them of who is at fault for the fact that they haven't had children, and the Malach does not want to give him ammunition against her. So all of that brings us to Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. Chapter 13, sentence 9.
Can I just ask you one question? I mean, you might have discussed it last time. At that time, would they have ever thought that a man could be, it could be his fault that a woman can become pregnant?
I believe so. I mean, it doesn't come up in Tanakh cases, we noted last week, because there are no cases other than this one, in Tanakh, of a couple who don't have children where the husband also does not have children. In other words, Abraham has children with Hagar, Yaakov has children with Leah. I don't think you have other cases. Elkanah has with Penina. So I'm not sure you have other cases like this, in which neither of them has any children we know of. Okay. So back to positive tests, which we started talking about already when we introduced this section, but now let's see it in greater depth. Vayishma Elokim b'kol Manoach. God listens to Manoach, vayavo malach v'elokim odeh ha'isha. Nonetheless, the malach comes back to the woman, even though the whole reason for the malach visiting, as Mitzudat David emphasizes, is just to satisfy this request. The malach isn't going to say anything new. In substance, it's already known. Nonetheless, he's going to come back to answer Manoach, and he's going to talk to her. And we noted already from Abar Benel, she's more suited for nevuah. She's sitting out in the field. The husband is not with her. I wonder, every time I read this, whether he's not with her because he either thinks that the malach is coming back to him, he doesn't think the malach is going to show up with her, but whether it's because he doesn't believe in this whole story in the first place, and therefore he's not hanging out with her, he's off doing whatever he's going to do in the field. I wonder if there's something we're meant to learn from the fact that he's out in the field.
Could it mean symbolically, en ima, that he's not with her in spirit?
Interesting. If not for the fact that we see that he's physically not with her, because she has to go run and tell him, I would agree with you. Yeah. Vatamahero Isha, so she goes off and running to tell him. Wait, we saw this. Vatagei Isha, she told her husband. Vatomer 11, she said to him, Hine Nirai Elai HaIsha Sher Baba Yom Elai. That man from today, he's back. Vayakam Vayelech Manoach Acharei. Remember that they don't know that it's a malach at this point. She has already said something's up with him. She said, he looks like I imagine a malach looks. But that's all we had so far. Vayakam Vayelech Manoach Acharei Ishto. So Manoach got up and went after his wife. We have this terminology, and again, this is another thing that I wonder about. It said Yoshevet before, she was sitting down in the field, and now it's Vayakam, and he got up. I wonder about these physical just positions that are being emphasized, neither of which was necessary. You could have said Hi Basadeh, and Vayelech Manoach Acharei Yishto. I have nothing to do with these words except to note, you know, something seems strange, but I don't know what
nobody
it would be like. I have not seen anyone convey anything about it now. Yeah.
Wasn't she waiting for him to come again? So maybe she was sitting waiting for him.
Maybe. I just think that the word vayakam is unnecessary.
And if his wife is waiting for some strange man that he doesn't know is an angel, isn't that a bit odd?
Yeah, no, if he really doesn't trust her, why isn't he there?
Yeah.
Understood. Except that he davened for this, whatever it is, to come back.
This angel.
Yeah. So he follows his wife. Now here, that would have been an innocent turn of phrase. If I were reading this and I didn't know the Gemara on it, so I would just say, okay, so Manoach went, he followed his wife, and he came to the man, and he said to him, are you the man who, etc., and you're done. But the Gemara in Brachos says something's wrong here. Take a look, please, at source number one. And this builds on the conversation that we already have had about who Manoach is. Is he a good man? Is he a righteous man? What do we know about him? We talked about his name when he's introduced, Ushmo Manoach, which sounds like he's a good one. He's like Ushmo Boaz and so on. Well, take a look here. The Gemara begins by saying, Manoach Am Ha'aretz Haya. Manoach was an Am Ha'aretz. The word Am Ha'aretz, or the phrase Am Ha'aretz, it's not really a word or a phrase. All right, the title, Am Ha'aretz, has multiple meanings, depending on context. Am Ha'aretz can literally mean, and it sometimes does mean, people in the land. And that's all it is. It's not pejorative. It's not a statement about their righteousness or their learnedness or whatever. These are the people in the land. Am Ha'aretz, a regular person.
Not Plony Amoni. Not Joshua.
No.
It's higher than Joshua.
Well, no, it's not meant to be an identifier. At the same time, we are more familiar with Am Ha'aretz to mean somebody who is ignorant. There's a third use of Am Ha'aretz, which is that someone is not careful about mitzvot. They're not that careful about observance. They'll do some things, they won't do others, not based on denying the legitimacy of Judaism, but just because, I'm careful about some things and not about others. So, unclear what's being referred to here, but watch the way the Gemara plays out. Manoach is being described as Am Ha'aretz. You already know it's usage number two or three. You know it's not one, because you don't call someone, this is an Am Ha'aretz, if all you mean is, he's a regular person. Dichsiv, they quote our pasuk, Vayelech Manoach Acharei Ishto, because the pasuk says, Manoach walked after his wife. What are they picking up on here?
Well,
That's what my wife should call the husband.
Maybe. That's not the way the commentators generally take it. It's not the way it's usually taken. Usually it's taken as being, sorry.
He followed her.
Well, I don't mean on this, but what's the negative? What are they reading here as being negatives? The general assumption is that it's not about the man should be in front and the woman should walk 10 steps behind.
He listens.
Nope, that won't be their issue either. They're very comfortable with that, as you'll see. The issue is propriety. And the issue is that the man should not be walking behind a woman, even his wife. And the issue is that he shouldn't be watching her. That's the issue. It's a snoot issue. He's not supposed to be walking directly behind her, even though she's his wife. So Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, "What are you talking about? Didn't you not read any other pesukim in Tanakh?" Maskil lo Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak asks, "Ela me'ata? If so, then gabe Elkana. What about Elkana? Dichsiv vayelech Elkana acharei yishto." Elkanah walked behind Hannah, apparently. V'gabei Elisha. And what about Elisha, where she wasn't even his wife? D'chsiv v'yakam v'yelech achareha. Talking about the Shunammit, right? When she goes to summon Elisha because her son appears to have died, it says v'yakam v'yelech achareha. He got up and he walked after her. So, hachinami achareha mamish, does that mean literally he walked after her? Are you now going to indict Elisha? That's, Manoach, maybe you have problems with Manoach. We've read things already about Manoach that make us wonder about him. But you can't do that to Elisha. So the answer is no. Ela acharei dvarea v'acharei atzasa. Rather, what it means is what Ruth was talking about. He followed her words, he followed her counsel, and there's nothing wrong with doing so. Elisha did it, and Elkanah did it, and here, hachanami acharei dvarea v'acharei atzasa. It was after her words and her counsel. So the Gemara seizes on these words, saying maybe there's something wrong going on here, before coming back and saying, no, nothing is wrong here. This is not your reason to criticize Manoach. That's the, you may have other reasons to criticize Manoach, but this is not on the list. That's all. Like I said, I wouldn't have even picked up on the phrase, on the turn of phrase, but the Gemara is very sensitive to this issue of Tzniut and of the way that they're going to interact, and wants to know what's going on here. Is he really walking behind her? Okay. Pasuk Yud Beis, sentence 12 then. Vayomer Manoach. I'm sorry, I jumped. The Vayavolei, she came to the man. Vayomer lo, he said to him, still in 11. Ha'atza ha'isha sher dibarta el ha'isha. Are you the man who spoke to the woman? We noted last time that was a very odd way to refer to his wife. Vayomer ani. And the Malach says, I. As in, I'm not interested in having a conversation with you. I came back because you told me to come back. Fine, I'm here. This way you will know that it really was a Malach. At least that your wife had a conversation with somebody, but I'm going to say one word, and that's it. So, Vayomer Manoach is not done. He's persistent. Ata yavo dvarecha. Now shall your words come true. Mayiyeh mishpat hanar umaseihu. What will be mishpat hanar, and what will be his maasim, his deeds? So what is it that Manoach is asking to know? We ask this question when we introduce the section. What are his responsibilities? Maybe.
What's special about him?
What
will become of him?
What will become of him, exactly. So we have two different trends within the commentators on this. Rashi, Radak say it's a practical question. Like I said before, he wants to know, when the kid is born, what are we supposed to do? You told me about the pregnancy, but afterwards, what else happens? Is he a regular nazir for the rest of his life? To which the Malach's response is going to be, take a look at what the Malach says before we come back to this pasuk. Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Malach Hashem al Manoach. The Malach says to Manoach, exactly what I told you. Mikol Asher Amarti El Ha'isha, what I told your wife. Right, Tisha Mer, that you should be careful of. Mikol Asher Yitzei Migefen Hayayin Lo Sochal, she shall not eat anything from the wine grape. And note there, it's not just the drink, but anything from it. This is like the Nazir in the Torah. The Yayin v'shechar al teisht, as well as the drinks. V'chol tuma al tochal, do not eat anything tamei. And now, as I said before, I don't know what tamei could refer to here. We understood tamei until now to mean that which a Nazir is not supposed to eat. But he's already said what a Nazir isn't supposed to eat. So I don't know what is included here, unless he really is saying non-kosher food, and it's just that they're so low in their level that they need a malach to tell them, don't eat treif. For Shimshon's sake, don't eat treif. I don't know, it's very difficult to understand. Everything I told her, you should be careful about. So he says in the beginning, and he says at the end, right? Exactly what I told her. Here's the list. Exactly what I told her, that's it. In other words, there are no specific instructions beyond this for this child. So when he's born, he's just going to continue this, is the assumption. He's not going to drink, right? He's not going to become tamei, we talked about. That's the set of instructions.
He doesn't tell the woman what to do once he's born.
Right. The assumption is that by telling her he's going to be a Nazir, he has given these instructions as for him also, because it says he's going to be a Nazir from the beginning. Yeah, sorry?
Did he actually specify that?
Yeah.
The child's going to be a Nazir.
Correct, yeah. Now, that was already in the original. If you take a look at Pasuk Hey, that's where it appears. So that's one way to take it. The response of the Malach is there are no new instructions. That's it. That's all there was. The other way to take it is Abarbanel's approach. Abarbanel says, and I brought it on the sheet in source number 2, that Maaseihu, what will be his deeds, means what's he going to do? Like Shoshana said, what's going to become of him? So Sha'al sheyagid lo ha'atid v'haniflaot asher ya'aseh acharei gadel ha'na'ar hazeh. He wants to know, what's this kid going to do when he grows up? What are his wonders going to be? Acharei asher akel yisbarach molido al derech neis. If God's causing a miracle for there to be a child, right? We haven't had a kid all these years, and suddenly we have one. V'shagazar sheyi a nazir, and he's saying this should be a nazir, v'shiyi a nizirusam in abeden, and from the womb, and not to mention sending a malach, he must be born for some purpose. Tell me why we're doing all of this, is what Manoach is saying. To which the Malach's response is, right? What's the Malach's answer? Well, what did we just see in these psukim in Yud-Gimel and Yud-Dalet?
Whatever I told the woman.
Right, no, I am not going to tell you. That's the Malach's answer. The Malach's answer is, I'm not telling you what his future is going to be. He doesn't say. And the reason why he doesn't say could be as simple as could be as simple as what we said earlier regarding why she didn't tell her husband what the Malach had said. The Malach said, "Hu yachel Oshia Yisrael, he's going to save Israel." Right? She chose not to tell that to her husband. He doesn't know. And the Malach chooses not to tell that to her husband. Probably for the same reason that she didn't. Right? Abarbanel knows. Which is, because if it becomes known, it could be dangerous. Maybe we trust her not to speak about it. But Manoach, we're not so sure about it.
And she doesn't trust her husband.
And she doesn't trust him either. Well, she knows him better than the Malach does. It's a question of who is going to be trustworthy in this. She is worthy to be told, he's not. That's the message. Now, one other thing here that I think is fascinating, it only caught my eye this week as I was going over this. The simple read of what's going on in this section is that we're setting up Hatzlaponi as this righteous mother of Israel. Right? All the different pieces that we've seen. The Malach comes to her. She is the Akara who is like the other six great Akarot in our history, the women who were not able to have children. She is the one who is trusted with raising Shimshon. She's the one the Malach comes back to again. You could read this on a very simple level as, here's another role model. Here's somebody else who we can look up to in the pantheon of great people in our history. And I think that's on one level. But I think there's something else going on here. I wonder if this isn't here also because of the roles of the other women in the Shimshon story. I already mentioned when I outlined the story in the beginning, we started on this, that Shimshon is going to get involved with three Plishti women. Right? They're not good for him, so to speak. They're not righteous. They're, in fact, deceitful. Right? Delilah, of course, is the most famous one out of the three. But I wonder if part of it is not the contrast between them. In the same way, go back to the story of Devorah and Yael, right? We had Devorah and Yael on one side, and we had the mother of Sisera on the other side. You know, it's the Jew who is righteous, and then you have the one on the other side who is wicked and depraved, the mother of Sisera, who is comforted by people telling her, "Oh, don't worry, your son is pillaging and raping the victims. Don't worry about him at all. He's just fine." They contrast that with Yael and Devorah, much as we also contrasted. Well, there's more to the contrast. Let me leave it at that. The point is that I think these stories are trying to give us a message about who we can become. We don't have to be like the Knanim. We don't have to be like the Plishtim. We can become better. So Hatzlaponi is an example of somebody who does become better, whereas these women who Shimshon falls for are terrible. That, I think, is another sort of level to this story, and why we spend so much time on spelling out who she is. You didn't need this for the story, but it's teaching me a lesson. I would also go a step further. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. So, but if she's so important, why aren't we putting her name here?
Right. And that's a standard problem. I mean, you're right. The only answer that I can give that makes any sense to me is simply that they really didn't consider the name as important data. They felt like, here's somebody who is great, and you don't actually need to know what their name is. I don't really understand that, but that's the best I can answer, because it seems like it's true from the text. In other words, we're not reading anything in seeing the way that she is praised. It's so clear in the text that she's being presented as righteous, that the only thing I can say is that they don't believe that that's inconsistent with leaving her name for, you know, some list of Divrei Hayamim.
Other women who are praiseworthy, their names are mentioned.
Yeah, that's the thing. We generally do get names. I mean, I wonder, let me throw an idea out there that, keep in mind, we don't have enough information yet, but shortly we will. I wonder if there isn't any association between that and what happens with the Malach. Manoach is going to ask for the name of the Malach, and the Malach, according to most explanations, is going to decline. We'll have to see. I don't know if there's anything to be done with that. The Malach doesn't give a name, and her name is not listed either. I don't know. I think it's a better question than I have an answer for right now.
We don't have names for Abba Malachim, do we?
No, we have, as a matter of fact, a tradition of not naming Malachim.
So,
right? And this happens. We'll see.
Sure.
Yeah. No, but I think the question is why. The question fundamentally is why.
Yeah, but
what is it that is omitted for?
That's why in general, but not why in this particular case. It's the same as other cases for Menachem.
Right.
Whereas with her, it is in this particular case that
right.
They don't give a name.
Well, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens, and we'll see. We'll see what we get. Right now, though, it's an open question. But one other thing that I wanted to add here, which this could be a reach, and I say that, you know, from the beginning, but I like the idea too much not to mention it. You know that Eshet Chayil appears at the end of Sefer Mishlei. You know who wrote Eshet Chayil? Some of you have a Tanakh here. Take a look at Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph, please, but not at Eshet Chayil. Eshet Chayil begins several sentences into Mishlei's Proverbs. 31. It's the last one. The Eshet Chayil starts several sentences into the Perek. I want the first sentence in the Perek. Keep reading. Mm-hmm. Correct. These are the words of Lemuel. Lemuel, as the Gemara explains, is a reference to Shlomo. Lemuel is understood. Yeah, but you have to read the rest of the sentence. The words of Lemuel,
the mother,
which his mother rebuked him with.
his mother what?
Who rebuked him?
He's the father of the rebuke.
Read the next sentences. Read the next sentences right after. Read out the English.
What is it, my son? What is it, my son? And what is it, O son of my womb? And what is it, O son of my vow? Give not your strength to women, and let your conduct not destroy the protocol of kings. Is it not proper for kings who belong to God? Is it not proper for kings to drink much wine?
Yes. It is not proper. Not is it not proper. Oh. Not it is proper. It is not proper. So the opening of this perek is a rebuke to Shlomo. It's instruction. Not really a rebuke in the sense that he's doing something bad yet. But this is what you should do. This is Musar. She's saying that you should not run after women. You should not run after wine. Precisely. After that opening, look at the story. After that opening, after that introduction, she says to him, so what are you supposed to look for? Ashes hayo mi yimsa, and so on. She tells him what he's supposed to look for in a wife.
So she
is Shlomo's mother. We know who Shlomo's mother is. Shlomo's mother is Bathsheba. So I haven't seen there's a lot of discussion about who writes Eishes Chayil, meaning that there are midrashim on Eishes Chayil. There's a lot to be said about Eishes Chayil. But I think the pshat and the psukim, I think the simple read of the text is that this is Bathsheba, and that Bathsheba says this to try to teach him who he should be, which fits with the name Eishes Chayil. Who in Tanakh is the Eishes Chayil?
Ruth.
Ruth is the only person in Tanakh to be called Eishes Chayil. Ruth is Shlomo's grandmother. She is Shlomo's grandmother. What Bathsheba is telling him is, look for somebody like your great-grandmother, Ruth. And it fits the lines. Meaning you can go through line by line and see elements of Eishes Chayil that fit the life of Ruth. Except it's a problem. If you're Shlomo. Because you're getting instructions from Bathsheba, first of all. Bathsheba, we never had a long discussion about Bathsheba in this context. I've given shiurim on Bathsheba in general. Bathsheba is Rivka on steroids. In the sense that Rivka is the one who is in charge of Jewish history. In the sense that if you don't have Rivka, then Esav gets the bracha. Or Yaakov gets the bracha and Esav kills him. Right? Take your pick. Rivka is the one who makes sure that the Jewish people are formed the way they're supposed to be formed. She sends Yaakov off to Laban's house, where he ends up marrying Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah. That's the future of the Jewish people. It's all from Rivka. That's who Bathsheba is. I'm not even dealing with the Uriah Bathsheba story, because I'm never going to get through that. But she is the one who prevents Adoniyahu's coup. Right? Adoniyahu is a son of David. When David is already at the end of his life and he's bedridden, Adoniyahu tries to coronate himself, makes it a whole big thing. And Bathsheba, the Navi, Nathan HaNavi comes to Bathsheba and says, we have a problem. But Nathan doesn't go to David. Bathsheba goes to David. And she says, did you know that this was going on? And that's what moves David to act against Adoniyahu. But the story doesn't end there. Only the Haftorah ends there. Right? That's the Haftorah for Chayei Sarah, I think. Vayera Chayei Sarah. The Haftorah ends there. However, the story continues. Because after that story, David charges Shlomo with what he should do with different people. And he says, Adoniyahu gets to survive for now. And then, as long as he doesn't misbehave. And Adoniyahu is not done. Adoniyahu comes to Bathsheba and says, do you think you could talk to your son and convince him that I should be able to marry Abishag HaShunamit, who had been the aide of some sort to David? Would you please let me marry Abishag? I really love her. Now, it's not just that it's disrespectful. What kind of message does it convey to the kingdom if you marry this woman who was associated with the previous king? There's a reason he didn't go to Shlomo. right? He didn't go to Shlomo because he knew that Shlomo, wisest of all, right, would say off with his head and this case is over. He thinks he can take advantage by going around Shlomo to Shlomo's mother. He can't say no to his mother. And he thinks that Bathsheba is easily controlled. He doesn't understand who he's dealing with. Bathsheba does not say anything to him. She says, oh, let me talk to Shlomo. And she says to Shlomo, you know the most interesting conversation I just had? And at that point, it's all over for Adoniah. But she doesn't give orders. She doesn't do it explicitly. She doesn't, you know, take that kind of stand that's going to be, you know, in opposition overtly. But she works behind the scenes to make everything come out the way that it should. That's Bathsheba. So here you are in your Shlomo. You have Bathsheba as your model. And then you have, in addition to Bathsheba, this righteous and superlative woman, you now have your model of Ruth. Right? And you've been told, and it's made into Tanakh, for goodness sake, what you're supposed to look for. It's not surprising that when you look in Shlomo's life, you find him reporting in Kohelet, I couldn't find a single righteous woman. I couldn't find any. He said, Isha achad me'elef lo matzati. I couldn't find a single woman who lived up to what I should be marrying. Why? Because this was his standard. His standard is Eish Hayil. His standard is Bathsheba. Good luck. Right? All the Jewish men down through the ages who have been trying to find their mother in the woman they were looking for. That's what Shlomo runs into. This is, I wonder about.
Is that why he married so many wives? Because he...
That's the implication of what he says in Kohelet. He says, I went looking and I couldn't find, and I married 1,000. Whether it was really 1,000 or not 1,000, the political marriage, that's a separate discussion. The point is that I see this happening with Shlomo, and now I wonder about Shimshon. Shimshon has Haslaponi for a mother, right? The woman who sees the angel, the woman who has her head on straight and is able to deal with all of this in ways that we haven't even seen yet. And he ends up with these three Plishti women. I wonder if there isn't an element of the same issue here, of him not finding someone who is like his mother and just, you know, running after the Plishti women instead.
Wasn't he looking in the wrong place?
Maybe he had already tried looking in the right place and didn't find. I don't know. We're not given enough information. And psychoanalysis in Tanakh is always dangerous. We don't have enough information to really know what we're talking about. But at the same time, we're given these messages for us to learn from them. And the text is here trying to tell us something. And just the pattern there, I would like to find a third. And that would really help me feel like I've hit upon something.
I think we speak well for Jewish women.
What do you mean?
He can't find.
Well,
they weren't Jewish.
He's looking for perfection.
Yes.
He's looking for a woman who could talk to a malach.
Someone who he thinks.
Right.
In his eyes, perfection. The woman is fine, but in his.
In his eyes, she can't. She can't measure up.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be that I'm wrong, but I think that there's a lot to be said for this idea. Okay. So now let's see what happens at the end of the visit, because the visit isn't over. The malach is still hanging out. Pasuk Ted Vav, sentence 15. Even though he's already told them everything, and therefore presumably he could leave. Vayomer Manoach HaMalach Hashem. Manoach says to the malach, Natsirana Osach. Let's halt you. V'naseh lefanecha gidi'izim. And we will prepare before you a goat. Right, because that's what I always serve guests. Goat. The question of what in the world he's offering, I think, matters. Why is he offering goat? I mean, Abraham has guests and he gives them bakar, right? He gives them cattle, right? I mean, goat for real. So that's one thing we have to ask about. Note also the redundancy in what he says. I'd like to hold you here. And we'll make before you this goat. It sounds like there are multiple things going on here. So we have to see what this is about. Vayomer Malach Hashem al Manoach. But let's read the section first. The Malach says to Manoach, Al Tatsereini, in Tatsereini, I'm sorry, if you keep me here, Lo Acham B'Lachmecha, I'm not eating your food. Vim Ta'aseh Olah, and if you will make a burnt offering, Lashem Ta'alena, you shall bring it to God. Leading me to ask the question, when did Manoach say, I'm making any offerings? right? Was there any reference to a korban? So that may be the answer. The goat is not necessarily an offer of a meal. Nasa lifanecha, we will do before you, is some element of korban. So the thing is that Manoah thinks it's a human being. So therefore, the Malach responds, korbanos go to God. Kilo yada Manoach ki Malach Hashemu, because Manoach didn't know that it was a Malach. We're told explicitly, Manoach doesn't have a clue yet. Vayomer Manoach the Malach Hashem mi shemecha. So Manoach says to the Malach, what is your name? The word mi, of course, often means who, but I wouldn't get hung up on the on me being ma versus me being me, so to speak, because you do find the word having both potentials. It could be me as who, and it could be me as what. Either way, what's your name? Ki avod dvarcha v'chibanucha, because when your words come true, when a kid is born, we will honor you. Meaning, if I know who you are, I can tell people so-and-so came to us and told us this. Vayomer lo malach Hashem, and the malach says, lama zet tish'al lishmi? Why are you asking for my name? V'hu Feli. My name is Feli. What in the world does that mean? What do you have in your translations?
Since it is hidden.
Hidden. That's what all of them have?
Yeah.
Hidden?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to come back to that, because there is more than one way to take the this statement. It is hidden. He will not say his name. Maybe it's like solidarity, right? If your wife doesn't get her name, then I don't get my name either. I don't know. The Pasuk Yutes, sentence 19. Vayikach Manoach es gidi ha'izim ve'es hamincha. So Manoach takes the goat, and he takes the offering. Vayal al hatsur l'Hashem, and he puts it up on a stone for God. Umafli la'asos. And mafli la'asos, we're familiar with it, of course, from the Bracha Vasha Yatzar, right? Somehow or other, the Malach did wonders.
Is it the same shorash?
Yes, same exact one. It means wonders. Umanoach v'ishto ro'im, and Manoach and his wife were watching. They saw this. Apparently this tzur is a mizbeach, right? We've seen that before, I think with Gidon. We also had the tzur as a mizbeach. Maybe it was with Gidon. We had it with somebody using a tzur as a mizbeach. So the flame emerges from the mizbeach hashamayim up to the heavens. Vayal malach Hashem belav hamizbeach. And the malach goes up in the fire. Umanoach v'ishto ro'im. Manoach and his wife are still watching. They pull up in the hamartza and they fall to the ground. Okay, we're going to stop with that for the moment. There's a lot more to say, obviously. But go back for a minute, please, to Bereishis Perek Lamed Bet, those who have a Tanakh. Bereishis chapter 32, sentence 30. Chapter 32, sentence 30. Parshas Vayishlach. Same exact thing. Right, same words. Lama zet tishalashmi, the same exact words. Yaakov encounters some mystery being when he's waiting to fight Esav. Right, to meet Esav at any rate. He has a wrestling match with this being. We don't know who it is. The Torah only describes it as an ish, which sounds like a human being. But it's not a human being, because if we're a human being, why would Yaakov then ask him for a bracha, ask him for a blessing, and then further along, this being tells him, your name is no longer Yaakov, your name is actually Yisrael, and God confirms it. This is clearly not, a bandit who was trying to rob him. There's something else going on. Yaakov asks this being for his name, and the response is, Lama zet tishal l'shmi. Why do you ask me for my name? And he gives him a bracha, and that's it. Okay, so why won't Malachim tell their names?
Do they have names?
Well, we have plenty of names for God. We have no shortage of names for God.
It shouldn't be. Moshe's name isn't in the Haggadah, because we don't want to start believing in him.
Right.
But we have Raphael, Raphael. Yeah. We have those names.
We do, but where do we learn their names from? It's not at all clear where we get those names from. I mean, some of them are in Tanakh. I think Daniel, I think we actually are told he speaks to Gabriel. I mean, we actually get that there. But I like the idea that, you know, we don't want to give them sort of separate significance. Let them just be. They're just agents of God. They don't need a name.
Are they interchangeable, or is it specifically sent over the other?
Right. So the answer is they do have particular jobs. And the job is generally associated with their name, which we're going to come back to. So that's a question that we need to address. We need to understand also what exactly the Malach just told Manoach to do. The Malach told Manoach to bring a korban to God, fair, but to bring a korban. Is Manoach allowed to bring a korban? You have a Mishkan in Shiloh. We went through this a while back, and noted that there are periods in history when you're allowed to have a private altar, and there are periods when you're not allowed to have a private altar. Shiloh is a period when you're not allowed to have a private altar. So why does a Malach tell Manoach to bring a korban?
Well, he didn't tell him to bring it there, to the rock.
So you think it was Manoach's initiative? Maybe.
He told him to bring it, he didn't say where. You might have assumed that he should have done it in the right spot.
Could be. So, let's start from square one. First of all, refusing the food. If he's a Malach, which we've already said that almost everybody believes in terms of the various commentaries, it's only Ralbag who's the holdout. But if he's a Malach, then it makes sense that he doesn't eat. Right? That works. Ralbag thinks that it's Pinchas. So Ralbag, did I bring it on the sheet? I was going to. No. I guess I did not. Oh, I see why. I'm going to bring it later on. I'll bring it later on. You'll see. The Ralbag thinks that it's important that he hide his identity as a Navi. Ralbag believes that it's Pinchas, but he pretends to be a Malach. And so he refuses the food for reasons that we'll see in like 1 minute.
Abraham gave the food to the Malachim that came.
Right.
There's no big discussion about whether they ate or not.
Well, the Torah says they ate.
They ate.
Right. So it's possible that they eat for Abraham because it's out of respect for who he is, and because that was core to the story. In other words, this story is meant to teach me, among other things, about how Abraham and Sarah take care of guests. So if you have them offer it and the Malachim don't eat, that kind of kills the theme. Whereas here, that's a tangential thing. So maybe that's why. But it's a good point that with Abraham they do. Sorry.
Isn't there a midrash that they eat and just
disappears? It disappears.
I thought they didn't eat.
The food is there, but it seems it doesn't disappear or something. Or it does disappear. Isn't there some midrash?
The pasuk says explicitly, "V'hu omed aleihem tachas ha'eitz v'yochelu." Right? V'yochelu, and they ate. So all the Midrashim are going to have to address the question of where did it go? So either they're going to say this is all, you know, a hologram and it's just disappearing, or the answer is, as I think we mentioned briefly last week, that this the three men who come to him are in fact animated physical material. They're zombies. They're animated physical material and they're taking in the food as though, you know, as though it's regular eating. The Malachim have possessed, so to speak, matter. They've taken bodies. But this business about the name. So there are a couple of different approaches. One approach is this is a Malach, and therefore you can't know the name of the Malach for one of two reasons. The Medrash I brought you in source number 3 is a Sifri. And it says that the name is unknowable, not just for Manoach and Hatzlalponi, but for anyone including the Malach.
He said that was on me.
Correct. Very confusing on the first day of school. Take a look at source number 3. Lo Hashem Shenikra Achshav Nikra Hu La'achar Zman. The name it's called now isn't going to be its name later on. It doesn't have a permanent name. V'cheinu omer v'yomer elav malach Hashem lamazet yishal eshmi v'hu peli. That's our pasuk. Eini yodea la'ez Hashem ani mitchalef. I don't know what my name is going to be. And this is part of the idea that the name of a malach is associated with with its job. So whatever I'll be sent to next, that will be my name. My name describes what I do. That's one answer. There's also a Targum of specifically Targum Yonasan, which you know we give great credence to, quoted by Radak. He explains v'hu peli to mean v'yonasan tirgim v'hu mifarash. Mifarash, Aramaic, in Hebrew mifarash, means what? So here's a funny thing. There are two different ways you could translate the word mifarash, and that's why I deliberately didn't translate it on the translation. It could mean it is clear, it is explicit. That's one way to take mifarash. The other way to take mifarash is that it is separated. Like Pharisee, Prushim, it's separated, it's apart. So the question is, which one does it mean here? Well, that's actually not, that's easier said than done. You're easier asked than answered. Because he says, V'chein targum ki yafli arei yafresh. So too, when the Torah says ki yafli, which is the introduction to the laws of Nazir, ki yafli lindor neder Nazir, the translation in Aramaic there is arei yafresh when yafresh. So it's the same root. The problem is that you can ask the same question regarding that pasuk regarding Nazir. Ki yafli lindor neder Nazir. What does that mean? Usually we explain that to mean when he states explicitly the vow of being a Nazir. That there has to be an explicit statement in order for it to be binding. However, that's not the way he takes it. Ve'inyano, you know what it means? Mufrash umuvdal midat cha'oto. Distinct and separate from your knowledge. In other words, the Malach is saying, you can't know my name. And that's what he means when he says, v'hu peli, it is my wonder, it is something that you can't know. It is apart. It's not for human beings to know what the name of a Malach is. So within both of these approaches, I'm a Malach, you can't know my name, whether because I can't know my name either, peli, it's a wonder even to me, or this is something that is just above you. This isn't something you can grasp. Ralbag, on the other hand, as we noted, believes that this is Pinchas. So here's where he makes his comment about Pinchas not wanting to disclose that he's a Navi rather than a Malach. Take a look at source number 5. V'ulei lezot hasiba l'ratzana v'ilegalot shmo. Maybe this is why the Navi doesn't want to reveal his name. Ki az lo hayu ma'aminim ma'od b'nevi'im ki dvar Hashem yakar az. At that time, they didn't place a lot of faith in those who said, I am a Navi, because it was rare for anyone to actually speak to God. So in order that they would increase their confidence in his words, he didn't say, I am Pinchas. Personally, I would have been really impressed by meeting somebody who is 400 years old. But that's just me, you know, I don't know about Pinchas. So therefore he hides his identity and says, I'm not going to tell you. He pretends to be a Malach. There is a third approach to this, brought by Malbim. Malbim disagrees. There's something similar in the Yechezkel Kaufman edition as well. Malbim thinks his name is Peli. Like that's who he is. If you take a look at source number 6, the Gam Shmi Peli, and my name is also my wonder. His first explanation is Lo Yaduhu Shochne, Lo Yaduhu Shochne Chomer. Physical beings can't know it. The Gam Kivein, but he also intended, Ki Shem HaMalach Ulefi Shlichuso. The name of a Malach fits its mission. V'nishlach Beregazu La'asot Pla'ot. And he was sent at this time to perform wonders. K'mo Shekasu V'mafli La'asot. Like the Pasuk said, it used the word Pela twice in a row, right? They're associated. To say he did wonders in making this fire come down to consume the carbon. V'haya ata shmo peli. And right now, that was his name. His name was my wonder, because that's what he was doing. He was doing wondrous things. V'chazal baraba parshas naso pirshu shaya shmo peli al shem hanazirus. Alternatively, he quotes a medrash which says that his name is peli because of nazirut, because the Torah begins the laws of nazir, ki yafli lindor neder nazir. So therefore, yafli. I'm talking about being a Nazir, so my name is Peli. That's a stretch, but okay. That's hard. But what the Medrash that he's quoting is picking up on is not stretching. What they're trying to do is to show you the word Peli can't just be random here. the fact that it comes from Yafli, right, the fact that it comes in association with Nazir, which is described in the Torah as Yafli, that means something. It must mean that this is actually who he is. This is the word Peli is part of his identity. So we have three explanations for why we don't know the name, or for what the Malach said his name is. Either, I'm a Malach, I'm not telling you my name, or I am Pinchas, I'm not telling you my name, or alternatively, I am telling you my name. My name is my wonder. The only real weakness in this is then why say, why are you asking my name?
No.
Why does the Malach ask the question?
Uh-oh.
In other words, if you're going to tell him your name, then why did you ask, why are you asking me my name?
Oh, you can still say, you know, I'm going to tell you, but I don't know why you need to know.
I guess so. It just sounds strange, no? Mm. It's just like, why are you giving him a hard time when you're going to tell him anyway?
Yeah, it's not talking to.
Well, he had already told him. He told him why he wants to know his name. That's actually a good point. I've been looking at this entirely wrong. He knows why he wants to know his name. He said, yeah, we want to thank you. So now I have to come back and ask, so what do you mean when you say, Lamazet Tishah Lashmi? I already told you why. Unless the answer is, what he's trying to tell him is,
are you really a man or are you a Malach?
No. The Manoach thinks he's a human being. I think that's clear. But I think that the Malach is saying to him, there's no purpose in me telling you my name, because that which you have in mind, that you're going to show me honor when you have a child, is irrelevant. I'm a Malach. I'm gone. There's nothing for you to honor. Maybe that's the idea. The Lama Zet Tish'al Lishmi. The Lama Zet Tish'al Lishmi is effectively a rebuke of the Chibanucha. Of, you know, we're gonna honor you. You're not gonna honor me. There's no point. And my name is Peli. Either you can't know it anyway. What I mean with this, and Roberta, thank you for the question, because I always never realized what's going on. He's actually giving two different answers, right? His first answer that he's giving is, there's no point in asking me my name. You're not going to honor me anyway. And number two, my name is Peli, which either means, and by the way, you can't know it, or, no, my name is Peli. See you later. You know, it's two different answers that the Malach is giving. Good.
So the honor would be probably public honor, not just
correct.
Not just the couple. So
yeah,
the Malach doesn't want that.
Yeah,
he was going to give it a middle name, like
Shimshon. Oh, Shimshon Peli. Yeah, name the kid after the Malach.
Well, we don't find out why they call him Shimshon, right?
We're getting there, although not today. But yeah, we'll get there next time, God willing. So just hold on for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So Pasuk Ted, in Pasuk Ted Vav, right? They offer him this meal, right? They say, or Manoach really says, "Let's stop you here, and we will make this goat before you." So the conventional read would be that he's offering a gift to the Malach, right? Some kind of a car. He doesn't know it's a Malach at this point, but it's some kind of a gift for the Navi. Barbanel, though, notes the double wording that we're seeing here, where he says two things, and the Malach responds with two things, right? He says two things to the Malach. He says, "Let us stop you, and let us make a goat before you." Which again, you have to assume isn't an offer of dinner. It's a goat. So what he's offering instead is some kind of a carbon to God, but in the honor of this, in honor of the Navi.
Is it a common thing to give goats as a carbon?
Yes, carbon Pesach.
We
do goats. Yeah. We do goats. I mean, the truth of the matter is that Yaakov prepares for Yitzchak, right? Shnei Gedayei Zim, two goats. So yeah.
Isn't the fact that he's saying, "Well, we're going to make a korban," sort of recognizing, "Yes, I can see now that you're a malach rather than a man"?
The problem is that right after he offers it, it says he didn't realize it was a malach in that same sentence. Actually, the next sentence. Sorry, in Pasuk Ted Vav, he makes the offer, and in Pasuk Ted Zayin, we're told Manoach did not know that it was a malach. So it can't be that he thinks it's a malach at this point. It's a carbon in his honor, or it's a gift. Those are your two options realistically. So that's what he's offering. But Abarbanel says that's not really what he wants. Abarbanel notes that he first said, before he said, let's do the goat, his first statement was, let's hold you here. Right? That's what he said first. So take a look at number 7. Kasher Ama Noach, Shahaya Hamalach Mekatzer Bidvar Vatzeli Pater Misham. He saw the Malach was being really brief, right? As in, ani, as in, what I told your wife, right? And the Malach wants to leave. Chashav la'achila, he thought to feed him. Ve'laseis lefanav se'udan, to put a meal in front of him. Ba'ofen she'yis'akev sham, so that he'll stall. Right? It is a stall tactic. He wants the malach to stay. U'mitoch ha'achila yigalelo dvarim mima she'yiyeh. And in the course of staying, there will be more conversation, and I'll get more information about the child's future. You follow? That's why he's doing this. Vizehu, and that's why it says, Natsarana Osach, let's stop you. Then Azavanahidizim, and we'll do this goat. Right? We'll do the goat thing. The Efshar Ode, and then he says, you could also say, Shemanoach Amar Natsarana Osach, Manoach said, let's stop you here. Ubazehu More Enoshuso, meaning I added in the brackets of the Malach, that he's saying, let's stop you here. As in, you're a human being, so, you know, stay a while, the way you would talk to another person. Like when you invite somebody for a meal, right? So he's saying, why don't you stay for lunch? Right, that he's saying to the Navi. But then he also said, we'll make a goat before you, which is more associated with bringing a carbon to God. And then Abarbanel says, that's the response of the Malach in Pasuk Tetzayin. Right? The Malach says to him, "In Tatsarini, if you're trying to stall me, lo ochabalach mecha, I'm not eating your food." Right? And the word lechem, by the way, as Radak notes here, is food. That's a very important point elsewhere in Tanakh. Often people are very hung up on lechem as bread. But lechem in Tanakh often just means food. Right? With Yosef and Potiphar, he says the only thing that he keeps from him is halechem asher hu ochel. That doesn't mean literally his bread, it means his food. So lo ochal balachmecha, I won't eat your food. So that's one point. If you're going to stall me for lunch, I'm not eating. V'im ta'aseh olah, and if you're going to make a karban, l'ashem ta'alena, you shall bring it for God. Two separate points, because Manoach was trying to do two different things. Clear? We're following? Okay. So he makes the request for the name. We've now seen what happens in the Malach's response, and then we see this business with the carbon. So I'm going to very quickly, because we're running out of time. So I'm going to just very quickly explain what's going on with this carbon and the problem of the bama. It's in source number 8. The Gemara in Zvachim asks the question of, I don't understand, if you believe that bamot, private altars, are prohibited during Shiloh, then what's going on here? And the Gemara's answer is, Haras Shah Haisa. It was a temporary ruling. It was a temporary ruling, meaning that right now the Malach says, I want you to bring a carbon to God, even though it's not supposed to be allowed, you're a Malach and you can say things like that. The problem is that whenever you see the Gemara say something was a Haras Shah, we asked this question in the Ezra Shir also, we talked about Karbanos that Ezra's group brought. Whenever you see a Haras Shah, you have to ask yourself, why? If someone is breaking the rules, it's not at random. There has to be a reason why. So if we had more time, I would open it for discussion. But my thought here is that maybe the goal of the Haras Shah here is to prove that he's a Malach. Because when he brings the carbon to God, then the Malach disappears within the fire, and it's meant to be a show. The purpose of the Haras Shah, of saying to Manoach, bring a carbon to God, is so that he's going to be able to do the disappearing act in the fire and impress him.
But if he didn't know he was a Malach in the first place, why would he have agreed to bring the carbon if he wasn't allowed to?
Because he thinks it's a Navi.
Navi
get to do that.
Yeah.
The Navi has the Haras Shah capability that we see elsewhere also. And Eliyahu does it. Yeah.
Haras Shah.
Haras Shah. Hara'ah is a ruling.
Ah.
Like Torah. Hey, Vav, Reish. Here, if you look at the sheet, look at the last words in number 8.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. So the message in this section here, right, after our message in the previous section about the wonders of Hatzalel Poni, contrasting her with, I think, the women from the Plishtim, I think the point that emerges here may be to teach the Jews about God and to emerge from whatever idolatrous conceptions have crept in from the societies around us. In other words, this last business, these 5 or 6 psukim about Manoach offering the karban, trying to stall him, or not offering the karban, offering food, right? But offering to bring him a gift, and the Malach saying, I don't do that, right? That conveys a message about how God works. It conveys a message about angels, about Malachim. It says that we don't worship Malachim. Worship only goes to God. And going back to what we said from Yechezkel Kaufman about Shimshon's supernatural strength, we're taking something that the pagan nations around us, or idolatrous nations around us, think of as a magical idea, and declaring that it's actually from Hashem. That all loyalty goes back to God, and this is associated, and in this case, all korbanos go to God as well. So I think that may be what we're supposed to get from this. Clear? Good. So we pick up, God willing, in 2 weeks.